Dan Perkins Media presents a unique and exciting program. Truth Starts Now, a conversation with Dan Perkins. The left has taken away your rights to freedom of speech. Truth Starts Now is a platform for you to regain your voice. America and Americans will be better off if we can have civil and respectful conversations about the day's important issues. Now, here's your host, Dan Perkins.
Welcome to The Truth Starts Now, and we have a very distinguished guest, Paul Kemener, who's an attorney of great reputation. I wanted to talk to him because he has a great deal of experience in constitutional law. So, Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
I've got to start off with a question that either shows my ignorance or my intelligence about the law, but I think it's a question that, as I've been talking about it on my shows this past week or so, you're the first attorney I've had a chance to talk to about this question. People said it crossed my mind. So I want to take you back this week when we had the testimony of Mr. Herr, the attorney for the Justice Department, who conducted an extensive interview of Joe Biden over 2 days. And he interviewed hundreds of people, thousands of pages, if not millions of pages of documents. He said in his testimony, even though the Democrats were trying to get him to say he was doing something different than he actually did, he was exonerating Joe Biden. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, there's no doubt that the records that were in his possession were not permitted to be in his possession, and he broke the law. But I, as the prosecutor, had the prosecutorial discretion to decide whether or not I wanted to bring charges against him. And he said the reason he was concerned about that is because of his age, his demeanor, and his obviously, difficulty in remembering things. Now, So he said, I'm not going to prosecute. It reminded me of James Comey when he said over that 4th of July weekend that he reviewed the files as he could from Hillary Clinton and decided that no prosecutor in the country would take on that case of prosecuting Mrs. Clinton. Here's my question. He testified before Congress when asked by congressmen that he believed, and he wrote his report, that he broke the law. Now, I understand that in a case of what would be considered a criminal activity, a sitting president under the rules of the Justice Department cannot be tried. He could be charged, but he can't be tried. So here's the question with that, all that background, more for my audience than for you. If the prosecuting attorney, based on an interview, made a decision that he believed that the president of the United States was not mentally capable of testifying and that he would be too difficult a witness for the jury to convict, he chose not to prosecute President Biden. Last Thursday, a week ago today, we saw a side of Joe Biden that surprised even the Democrats. He didn't appear to be a person who was having difficulty thinking. He was angry. He was aggressive. He had his usual blunders, but reasonably coherent. So my question to you, Paul, is can the prosecuting attorney reverse his mind?
Yeah, thanks. That's a good question. Yes, he can, but he's not going to. He's already issued his report. He's now a private citizen. He's no longer special counsel. But just to clarify why he said he wasn't going to prosecute, because he didn't think that a jury would convict him based on Biden's memory of what he did years ago when he willfully took the documents. So let's get this clear. He said that he willfully took classified documents. They have him on tape talking to his ghostwriter. I've got the classified documents down in my garage or in the basement. And there's other evidence that he knew he was getting classified documents. But what Herr was saying was that today, if he were to testify to the jury, since the level of knowledge under this statute requires that you, quote, willfully knew you took classified documents. So when he interviewed him and said that his memory was faulty, et cetera, what he was trying to say was, well, if I put him before a jury and he gets on the stand, testifies saying, gee, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, I don't remember that I took classified documents, whether they were classified or I thought they were kind of just semi-confidential. I'm sorry, I don't remember. Her is saying that he doesn't think the jury would come back and convict him. Although during his testimony, he admitted under questioning that he thought that a reasonable juror could convict him on the evidence. So what he was doing was making a prosecutorial decision that, yeah, I've got the goods on the guy, but the element of the crime as to whether he willfully retained the classified documents, he may play up his memory to the jury, et cetera. Now, you're right that at the State of the Union address, he appeared very aggressive and on his toes, et cetera. That doesn't necessarily mean he now recalls all this stuff. I mean, clearly, he knew he was keeping the classified documents. And clearly, he violated the law. So I think the special counsel here was thinking that, wait a minute, you know, even if he did know it, he'd be tried before a jury in D.C. where 92.5% of the D.C. residents voted for Biden. So even if he was guilty as sin, you might have a juror saying, oh, you know, I'm going to give this guy a break. I'm not going to convict him. So the prosecutor took that all into account. And that's why he didn't do it. So he cannot change course now based on what his performance was, Biden's performance at the State of the Union, even if he were still the special counsel. Maybe he could, but I don't think there is reason for not prosecuting aligns with the fact that Biden seemed pretty sharp during the State of the Union message. And of course, he can't change his mind now anyway, because he's no longer a special counsel.
Okay, so let's take it now one step further. There doesn't seem to be any doubt that he legally had no right to possess those papers.
Sure.
So he took those newspaper, he took those all those documents and put them in four or five different places. At the time he took those documents, he should have known as a member of Congress and vice president that he wasn't allowed under the law to take those documents,
sure.
Number one. Number two, when he gave the documents, and I thought was extremely important that in Herr's testimony, he talked about the greed of the president, that he gave the classified documents clearly to a person who was never allowed to have those classified documents for the purposes of being a ghostwriter, of writing a book, that he was guaranteed an $8 million payday.
Right.
And so he gave classified documents to a person who was not eligible to receive those because they didn't have the proper security clearances. And on top of that, when it was determined that he had given those documents to the ghostwriter immediately destroyed the documents. You can't hire a ghostwriter, and you can't go down in your garage and pull out classified documents and give it to the ghostwriter and not and realize that you have broken several laws. And if the special prosecutor couldn't prosecute him, with the discovery of that information, could another prosecutor prosecute him?
But just to clarify the facts here, as I understand it, he did not give the actual documents to his ghostwriter. What he did was read excerpts from the documents and from his notebook that when he was vice president that contained classified information to the ghostwriter who recorded that interview and who subsequently, once the special counsel was appointed, deleted that audio thing, a tape. Now, that person could have been easily prosecuted for obstruction of justice. After all, they're going after Trump and his aide for trying to delete videotapes at Mar-a-Lago, but didn't succeed. So they're prosecuting Trump for obstructing justice there. But here's a guy who actually deleted the audio tape, and he gets a free pass. So basically what, you know, that guy got a free pass that he should not have. But nevertheless, what you're saying is basically, does this evidence Biden's knowledge at the time? No doubt about it. That's what the special counsel said. He's got the evidence. He could be able to go to the trial and have Biden on the stand and say, gee, I don't remember if it was classified or not. Oh, you don't? Ladies and gentlemen, the jury, here's the audio tape. Here's the motivation. He was going to get $8 million for his a book advance. And he also wanted to make sure he went down in history, that his legacy would be, here's what I know about foreign affairs in Afghanistan, which was the issue, etc. So there's A, plenty of motivation for him to take the documents, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. And you've heard the audio tape of Biden's voice telling his ghostwriter, you got to be careful with this stuff. It's got classified information in it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, who are you going to believe? Biden at the time he took it, or his faulty memory now? And that's where the case should have been made. And any reasonable jury would have said, hey, nice try saying you don't have a memory now, but how can that ever be excused? I mean, if that's the case, then any senior citizen charged with any crime that took place years ago could come back and say, yeah, I don't remember if I robbed that bank or not 10, 15 years ago. So you can't convict me of that. I mean, that's how silly this defense would be. But nevertheless, I think what's probably motivating the prosecutor was that a jury here in D.C., which is heavily Democratic and which is 92% voted for Biden, would give him a break in any event. And therefore, it wasn't worth the candle to go through a criminal trial only to get either an acquittal or, more likely, a hung jury.
So that leads me, we've got about a minute before we get, and this really went fast. It's a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for what you're educating me and my audience. But the question I want to ask you, because I'm unsure, as I said, I'm only a practicing attorney. I'm not a real attorney. Is there a statute of limitations involved here?
Yeah, there is. Normally, there's a 6-year statute of limitations for under federal law for violating a federal crime. Now, one might say, well, didn't the statute pass years ago? Answer, no, because it kept running because he kept retaining the documents until last year or so, when they found the documents in the garage, you know, in the Penn Biden Center and everywhere else. So I think that's where the statute of limitations would have started.
So my question, I want to make sure I heard you correctly. Did I understand you to say, if you committed a crime, and I'm using within the statute of limitations,
yeah,
although you just said, as long as he held the documents that he shouldn't have held, the clock hadn't run on, started to run on the statute of limitations.
Is that right?
Okay. So did I hear you say that if he would have taken the documents after he left the White House and took them into the garage and the Penn Center and all these other places, and he did that, I hate to use the word assume, but can we assume at the time he decided to take the documents when he was no longer vice president, and he took stuff while he was vice president and while he was a senator, if he took it, his state of mind at the time he took the documents for the purposes of the crime is more important than his state of mind 6 years later?
Well, yeah, I think that's generally true, because nevertheless, even if he now says, I don't remember that they were classified, you know, the proof is in the pudding. We've got the documents in your possession. So that may be a gray area, whether the statute ran when he took it, and now it ran up from 2017 to 2023, 6 years is up, or whether it runs from when he no longer had a memory of it. But, you know, I think either way, it's clear that he got a super break here by this special counsel for not prosecuting him.
Just like his son got on the statute of limitations running out on his federal income taxes.
Absolutely. For the 2016-2017 money he got from Burisma, those tax charges were not filed. The special counsel, David Weiss, let it run out on that. And now he's still facing some serious tax charges
right.
for years afterwards.
Paul, thank you for joining us on this first segment. We'll be right back
sure.
after these messages. But how can people follow you and your work and your thoughts?
Sure. Just go to our website, the National Legal and Policy Center. It's nlpc.org, O-R-G, nlpc.org. And you'll see all the good stuff that our a small group is doing. And we appreciate your viewers checking it out, and all the support we can get will be put to good use.
Super. We'll be right back with Paul.
I'm Dan Perkins, the author of a new historical romance novel called Sad Eyes. It is a story of a young woman, a beautiful Irish lass with red hair, green eyes, and curves that won't quit. She is born in 1912 in Waterloo, Iowa. She decides she wants to be an ER nurse, but she wants to move away from Waterloo to the excitement of the big city. She is accepted at St. James School of Nursing in Chicago and began a life as a true American patriot, serving her country in two wars. She fell in love with the love of her life. She takes the longest honeymoon in history. This novel is full of twists and turns and is difficult to put down. You can find Sad Eyes at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and J. Carroll Publishing. Or through your local bookstore. Get it, read it, tell people about it, and write a review on Amazon. This is Dan Perkins.
Welcome back to The Truth Starts Now. And we've been speaking with Paul, and I just wanted to do one quick follow-up question from the first segment.
Sure.
And then I want to talk about the current trials and the chaos around all these trials. We were talking about the ghostwriter.
Yes.
The ghostwriter received either directly or indirectly, confidential classified information. He destroyed the tape of his conversation with Biden covering that material. Is he still vulnerable to violating the Records Act?
He's still vulnerable to obstruction of justice because he destroyed those tapes when the special counsel was appointed. About a year or so ago, and therefore the six-year statute of limitations hasn't run on him. So that's a good point. He's still going to be prosecuted for obstruction of justice and should be.
Yeah.
And that could be done by Merrick Garland or any prosecutor in that jurisdiction where he the crime was committed. So that's an excellent point that even if they're taking a pass on going after Biden because he has a bad memory. Surely this ghostwriter doesn't have a bad memory because right. he purposely deleted the evidence a year or so ago when Robert Hur was appointed. So excellent. Yeah, that's still a live prosecutable offense.
Are you surprised that nobody has?
Yes, in a way. But we don't, it's only now that we got the evidence that he did intentionally destroy it. So I'm surprised that Hur didn't bring that charge, but it's now still there laying on the table that anybody can pick up that gun and use it against this guy. So it may be that another prosecutor would have to, but if Biden wins the election and keeps Merrick Garland, don't count on Merrick Garland
yeah.
saying, yeah, I'm going to go after this.
I agree with you.
Yeah, okay. But if Trump wins, you bet a new attorney general could say, hey, we're not finished here yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. So we agreed we want to talk a little bit about the cases. Do you think Willis is going to get sacked by the judge?
Yeah, I think we're going to know that by tomorrow, whether she's going to be sanctioned and thrown off the case along with her lover, Nathan Wade. The evidence was pretty strong. The issue is the standard of proof, what they have to show in terms of a conflict of interest. Trump's attorneys are arguing that it only has to be an appearance of a conflict of interest, that she was hired this guy to get go on these trips with them and get reimbursed and all that. Whereas the prosecutor is arguing, no, it has to be an actual conflict of interest, that she took point of this guy to get the money, have him pay her way on all these trips, etc. I think this judge will probably come down somewhere in the middle and may throw Nathan Wade off the case, or he may throw them both off the case. I don't think he'll just dismiss the whole lawsuit or the indictment or throw the whole team off the case. So it's something that one way or the other that can be appealed. If he rules in favor of Trump and case is over, they're kicked off, she may appeal that to a higher court, and vice versa. If he says, no, everything was fine here, you can stay on the case, the Trump and his co-defendants can appeal that. But whatever decision comes out, this case has been totally damaged already. I mean, just with yesterday, where the court dismissed six counts of the indictment against Trump, a couple co-defendants, Giuliani, etc., the counts that said that they basically conspired to have the state officials violate their oath of office by checking the polls to see if there's any election and funny business going on. And the court said, well, wait a minute. Your allegations just say what Trump and Giuliani did in terms of trying to get the Secretary of State, trying to get the Georgia senators to have alternate electors and all that. But where's the crime here? You said that they made the other state officials violate their oath of office. Well, wait a minute. Their oath of office says, I hereby swear to defend the Georgia Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, so help me God. Well, there's hundreds of provisions in both those constitutions. Which provision are you charging Trump having them violate? This was a rookie mistake by this rookie prosecutor that she hired, who never tried a felony case in his life. And so this clearly damages the case. The other counts still remain there. And so the prosecutors have the option of either appealing that decision to a higher Georgia appellate court, or, as the judge suggested, hey, you want to go back and do a do-over? Go back to the grand jury and spell it out to them which provision you claim that the state officials are violating. And that'll take time. Or you can just simply go with the case and have these charges dropped and not being prosecuted. But keep in mind, the one charge against Trump is the one that all the media is playing up. And that's the phone call that he made to Raffensperger, where he said, all I want you to do is find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, et cetera. And that's supposed to be, game over, you're guilty, et cetera. But now that charge is thrown out. Plus, that charge, again, standing on its own, doesn't mean anything. He asked Raffensperger to go back, look at the vote count, see if there are any irregularities. We think you can find those. But we're not telling you that if you don't do what we say, or if you don't fake it and switch some votes for us unlawfully. He never asked him to violate his oath of office. He just asked him to do a more thorough job. How is that criminal? I mean, right. Under our First Amendment, Everybody has a right to petition their government for redress of grievances, right? Mm-hmm. And that redress of grievances, it's not up to the government to say, well, we don't think your grievance is legitimate, let alone we're going to criminalize you for even asking the government to redress your mm-hmm. grievance. I mean, you got some really, you know, out of the world grievances where somebody says to the CIA, hey, you're putting a bug in my brain. I want you to stop, spying on me, etc. Now, the CIA say, oh, how dare you ask us about something wacko like that? We're going to prosecute you for, asking such a redress of a grievance that we think is frivolous. No. So that's all Trump did. So he's got a good First Amendment defense, let alone now that the charges dropped in terms of what actually they claim was criminal in terms of having the state officials violate their oath of office.
Paul, we're going back to my practicing attorney side again. It okay. seems to me that there is a charge of perjury on both parties, a district attorney and the prosecuting attorney for her. If they, in fact, perjured themselves by lying to the court and the court doesn't address that in their decision, they got away with perjury.
Yeah, well, let me break that down. The perjury would be where both Fannie Willis and Nathan White said that their relationship began after she appointed him to the position, whereas there was testimony under oath that said, no, this romantic relationship began before she appointed him. So one of those witnesses are lying. Now, if the judge rules that that the evidence is such that he believes the other witnesses and not her, oh, you bet that can be perjury. But that would be something for the prosecutor down there to prosecute. The judge cannot prosecute, but he could certainly say, hey, I think this witness, Fannie Willis, and your lover were lying on the stand. I hereby refer this to the local prosecutors to go after it. Plus, she's already under a bar complaint for allegedly lying like this, and the bar authorities can strip her of her bar license if they find that she was lying under oath and other misconduct that took place. Now, in terms of her, Robert Herr, who interviewed Joe Biden, I'm not sure what perjury you're referring to there. Seemed to come across pretty level-headed, fending off the Democratic mischaracterizations of his report where Congresswoman Jayapal said, oh, well, your report exonerates Joe Biden. And he goes, hey, no. I never used the word exonerate.
Right.
In this
right.
report, don't put words in my mouth.
My question was, it was Fannie and her lover, if in fact there's evidence that shows that they lied, both of them lied to the court, that's perjury.
Yes.
And you're saying it would be referred to a local prosecutor to decide. But if that's the case, if he refers a perjury charge to the local prosecutor, this trial ain't going anywhere until they resolve that issue.
No, not necessarily, because if he's doing that and says she's lying, he's going to throw them off the case and they're going to have to appoint a new prosecutorial team. In any event, this case is not going anywhere before the election, which is key. That's the key thing, that even if somehow this case stumbles along and stays alive one way or the other, it ain't going to be tried before the election. So I'm not worried about that in terms of the delay on it. But if she lied, she needs to be either prosecuted or she needs to have her bar license revoked.
If the judge decides that there is perjury here, then as I understand it, there is a judge in Fulton County who would ostensibly temporarily take the case and to try and find another prosecutor in Fulton County, if possible, who would take the case. And the story out of Atlanta is that most of the prosecutors who could possibly be reassigned the case, if they took it, would not prosecute it under the same rules that she had. And so that they may not even prosecute the case if it has to be reassigned to another prosecuting attorney.
Yeah, that may be the case, or they may drop the silly RICO charges and strip it down to some bare bones thing. So, yeah, right. These are all hypothetical questions. They're really good ones, but we'll just have to wait and see in a few days what this judge does.
Right. I have one more quick question, and we're running over, and that's okay. You're worth running over. I hope that sounded right.
Yeah, exactly.
New York and the $450 million in the fine for Donald Trump. What's going to happen with that case?
Well, that's going to go on appeal. They posted the bond in that case, and now they're going to just follow the normal appellate procedure and have an appellate court look at whether or not the lower court was correct in finding that there was fraud by Donald Trump when there were no victims. The banks all got repaid. They would gladly lend him money again, or whether this Letitia James theory that, well, it doesn't make any difference, we're going to go after you because you got a better interest rate because of your alleged inflating your assets. But I think they're going to win that case. The one that's really coming up here in 2 weeks, which will be the first criminal trial, is the one about the hush money payments. And in a way, that's the weakest of the four criminal cases. And I'm kind of glad to see that go first, because I think they're going to win that one. And that might set the tone for the rest of these other criminal cases that I think were basically over-prosecuted and basically a selective prosecution. And as Trump said, a witch hunt and a dual system of justice.
Do you think, this is my last question, I hope, because I could probably spend another hour with you, and I would love to have you come back on sometime.
Sure.
Do you think that the strategy here was to bankrupt Donald Trump?
Oh, I think that's not only the strategy to bankrupt, but to throw him in jail. They want to see this president, ex-president, to go behind bars. Bankruptcy is also part of it in terms of getting him to not carry out his business affairs under this decision from New York, by the way. Donald Trump is barred for 3 years from conducting the family business, and his two sons are barred for 2 years. So it's clear that they're trying to, you know, cut off his knees here, so to speak, financially and business-wise. But I think ultimately they'd like to see him behind bars, which ain't going to happen in any event.
So the sense is that I hear is that it'll never make it past the appellate court because of
that's a good point.
Court,
yeah, that even if he is convicted, everybody says, "Well, if Donald Trump's convicted, he's going to lose all the votes, et cetera." Hey, everybody, you know, convictions are reversed all the time, and it'll take at least a year, if not more, for appeals to run out there. And right now, they're arguing in the Florida case issues of whether he has immunity from a prosecution for that, as well as there's another issue that we can get into at some future time that Jack Smith, as a special counsel, is unlawfully appointed under the Constitution. And that's an argument I made when I challenged Robert Mueller back when he was going with the Russiagate thing. I represented an aide to Roger Stone, who was subpoenaed before the grand jury, saying, "Hey, Robert Mueller, who are you? If you're going to be a special counsel, why aren't you appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate like all U.S. attorneys in the country as a principal officer?" Same with Jack Smith. He's a super U.S. attorney. He can prosecute in D.C. He can prosecute in Florida. This kind of a powerful person was basically plucked from the street. He wasn't a government official at the time. He might as well have picked Taylor Swift and said, "Hey, I want you to be a special counsel here." Well, come on. You know, that's not the way our country runs in terms of having these kind of powers vested in and private citizens.
Paul, it's been a pleasure to have you on. And how can people follow you?
Yeah, again, go to our website, National Legal and Policy Center. The initials are nlpc.org, O-R-G, nlpc.org. And you can see all the good stuff we do in the public interest.
And I look forward to having you on again soon.
Sounds good.
My pleasure. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the show today. We hope you enjoyed it. And if you'd like to send a comment, please do so by sending it to dan@danperkinsmedia.org. That's dan@danperkinsmedia.org. And thanks for listening.